Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, October 1st. So when we last left the high-stakes soap opera of the Democrats in Congress after yesterday's show, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was aiming for a grand bargain between centrists and progressives by last night to approve both the bipartisan infrastructure bill for roads and rails and broadband and the human infrastructure bill to create new child care and elder care and family leave rights, plus climate change prevention measures. The agreement didn't come. Here's centrist Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
We need a little bit more time. We're getting that time in order to do it. We're going to come to an agreement. I'm trying to make sure they understand. I'm at $1.5 trillion. I think $1.5 trillion does exactly the necessary things we need to do to take care of our children, to take care of our people at the end of life, our seniors, and we're working hard on that.
Now, you'll notice he said $1.5 trillion in that clip, way less than the $3.5 trillion for human infrastructure that the president's plan includes. Manchin seemed to say he might be willing to vote for more of the president's plan later, but not right now.
I'm willing to sit down and work through that $1.5 to get our priorities, and they can come back and do later, and they can run on the rest of it later. I think there's many ways to get to where they want to, just not in everything at one time.
But that position later meant no deal with House Democrats like Pramila Jayapal of Washington State. You know, she's chair of the Progressive Caucus, who reminds us Manchin is in a very small minority of their party.
Look, we are in the same place we've always been. We put out an offer for $3.5 trillion, and it has all of our legislative language. And in fact, 96% of Democrats in the House and the Senate support that number.
Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. So they're back at it today. With me now, Washington Post correspondent Sung Min Kim, who covers the relationship between the Biden administration and Capitol Hill. Very relevant for right now. Sung Min, thanks for coming on. In the middle of all this, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
That Joe Manchin clip made it sound like he'd be open to the whole human infrastructure package, the $3.5 trillion in phases, just not all at once. Did he get any more specific about over what period of time or what he believes should come now and what should be delayed?
He hasn't been specific kind of on the sequencing, but he really did lay out his vision, his policy demands, how much exactly he wants to spend yesterday with reporters for the first time. I mean, we had known kind of bits and pieces about what he would prefer, but we didn't know too much about his red lines. We didn't really know too much about what he had directly told, for instance, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and President Biden about his visions for this massive domestic agenda package. So now we have a better sense. What Democratic leaders are trying to do is create some sort of a deal, some sort of a framework agreement with basically all corners of the Democratic Party, which would include, you know, Senator Manchin, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, another pivotal centrist who hails from Arizona, the leadership, and obviously the Progressive Caucus, which makes up a significant portion of the House and Senate majorities in Congress right now. So I presume that White House officials will be back on Capitol Hill today to continue the work, and we'll see what can happen by the end of the day, or maybe even through the weekend.
Sungmin, another aspect that we've come back to a lot on this show is that most of the $3.5 trillion over 10 years would be paid for in the president's plan by raising taxes on corporations and people making more than $400,000 a year. So it's not like they'd be depleting the treasury if these provisions to pay for the benefits and climate protection also pass. So since Manchin gets specific on the amount of spending he's willing to support, is he also holding out for specific limits on the tax hikes?
So there is a little bit of a difference between Senator Manchin and most of the rest of the Democratic Party on where the party should go on taxes. So, for example, President Biden, the White House, and many senior Democrats have coalesced around, for example, a 28% corporate tax rate, Right now, that rate is 21%. That was set by the Trump tax law in 2017. Before it was lowered to 21%, it was 35%. So 28% seems, which is what the Democrats want, seems to kind of hit at that sweet spot. House Democrats have proposed 26.5%. Senator Manchin wants 25%. So it's a little bit different, but these are all kind of workable differences. But the problem, one problem that was kind of revealed yesterday with Joe Manchin's demands was that he wants any sort of revenue that is raised that is over $1.5 trillion to go into actually deficit reduction, not towards, you know, spending for new programs or other initiatives as part of this package. And he's one of the few kind of rare deficit hawks in the Democratic Party. And frankly, in Congress, we've seen how deficits seem to have mattered little to members, to Democrats, and especially to Republicans after the Trump tax cuts in 2017. So that's one of the conditions that he laid out yesterday. But you're right. You know, the $3.5 trillion over 10 years, first of all, it is over 10 years. So thank you for emphasizing that. But it is, it should largely be paid for, is one of the House Democratic plan, which, to be clear, is not the Senate Democratic plan, but the House proposal has about $2.9 trillion in revenue raisers, which is a pretty significant amount. Obviously, not the entire $3.5 trillion, but a significant part of that.
You know what I don't understand? West Virginia is a very poor state. I presume the people Manchin represents would benefit much more from the child care and elder care in this bill than they would have their taxes raised or in any other way harmed. How many West Virginians even make $400,000 a year? So why does Manchin think the politics of the president's version are a political threat to him?
That's actually a really interesting question, and frankly, an argument that other Democrats have been pressing to him, that these programs will disproportionately benefit his constituents in West Virginia. But there are positions, I mean, he echoes oftentimes with his perspective. Senator Manchin does echo the perspectives of some of these more, business-friendly Democrats or even Republicans when he conveys his position. So he has talked over and over about why he supports a 25% corporate tax rate. He doesn't want the U.S. to be less globally competitive. On the issue of climate, he differs a lot with the rest of his party because of the reliance of coal in West Virginia. But you're right. These are programs that could very much benefit his constituents. But he has talked at the same time about making sure, he has talked actually heavily about means testing a lot of these benefit programs so that these new benefits, these new government spending initiatives go towards and are targeted towards the people who really need them. Some would argue that would make distributing the government aid, the government assistance much more complicated and not save that much money in the long run. But he does, he can be kind of a puzzle to figure out at times. And his fellow Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema, even more of an enigma because she actually doesn't lay out her positions in public. So it has been a challenge for the public and the rest of the Democratic Party to figure out where these two senators are at on these really important issues.
When Manchin digs in on this work requirement to get some of these child care benefits, is that racial code for his mostly white voters?
I think he would say again that this is to make sure that these programs really are given to and distributed to the people who need it most. And what I found interesting about the means testing issue, especially when you pose that question to White House officials, is that they are trying to make it clear, whether it is to Joe Manchin himself or to the rest of the Democratic Party, that they are open to doing some of that, imposing some of those conditions. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has been asked about this issue several times, including as recently as this week. She pointed out that, for example, the child tax credit that has been very popular and has been a big accomplishment of the Biden administration so far is means tested in some way, because obviously it doesn't go to everybody in the country. Bernie Sanders argues that he believes that benefits should be universal, but you do see some others in the party trying to work with Manchin, Senator Manchin, on this means testing issue.
And one other thing, based on your answer a minute ago, how much can we trace Manchin's opposition to fossil fuel industry campaign donors in that coal mine heavy state that he represents, or other corporate donors, as opposed to constituent voters' interests?
So if you ask him that, and he actually has been asked about not necessarily donations, but any sort of potential financial interest in the energy industry by reporters this week on Capitol Hill, and he would tell you, his people would tell you, that obviously those two, as any politician would, that his financial interests and the interests and how he and the policy positions that he takes are separate. Obviously, it is, for transparency purposes, it is something worth pointing out, but you know, Senator Manchin has long made a case for protecting the coal state interests of his home state. But it is certainly something that has been scrutinized, particularly this week, you know, as his positions become more clear.
Let's take a caller, I think, on this very point. Jay in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Sungmin Kim from The Washington Post in D.C. Hi, Jay.
Oh, hi, Brian, a longtime listener, and I'm honored to be on your show. So my question is, or my comment is, Joe Manchin has a conflict of interest here. The Guardian reported he owns millions of dollars in coal company stock. So why should a coal baron get to decide the future of our country, the future of our world, with the climate crisis really hitting us here? You know, the basement in my building was flooded terribly. Not as bad as in Queens, but it's just so unfair and so hypocritical, and I feel like the media coverage really gives him a pass on this.
Jay,
because his conflicts of interest are not really shown.
Jay, thank you very much. Well, how much of that can you confirm, Sungmin, about his personal conflict of interest, financial stake here? I had asked you about his political interest in having donors from the coal industry in his state either contribute to him or not. But the caller raises that he has a personal financial stake in keeping the fossil fuel status quo. Are you familiar with the truth about that?
So, again, this was actually something that Senator Manchin was asked about, any sort of personal financial holdings in a lot of these companies. And he told reporters on Capitol Hill this week that he has not actually handled his own finances in his time in public office. All of his assets are in a blind trust. It's held by, it's managed by outside advisors. It's a tactic that certainly a lot of members of Congress do, because a lot of these members do come in very wealthy with massive or significant financial holdings in various sectors. So a lot of these financial, activity is under the guardian of outside, in a blind trust, under the guardianship of outside advisors. But it is certainly something to highlight, and obviously there are, you know, members of Congress are required to disclose their financial interests. You know, they will never say that there is a direct correlation between their financial interests and how they vote or what policies they push. And, you know, it's something that's essentially kind of impossible to prove, but all we can do is show that, hey, he, you know, this member holds, has a financial stake in X or Y industry. These are the policies that he or she is pushing. And what we can do is to be transparent with the public about the interests of the member of Congress.
So the only rules, as it applies to this case and many others, are about transparency, disclosing what kind of stocks and other investments you hold in particular companies or industries. It sounds like there's no conflict of interest prohibition. Like if you're on the energy committee, you can't be an investor in energy stocks or something like that. Is that correct?
So there are very, in terms of conflict of interest, if there are certainly very obvious ones, like a spouse who is involved in something, they, you know, oftentimes members of Congress will take proactive steps to recuse him or herself. But on the whole, it's generally a transparency disclosure initiative that binds members of Congress.
And do you think this notion that his investments are in a blind trust managed by somebody else is legitimate? Or is this wink, wink, nod, nod, I know I've got a lot of fossil fuel stocks, but technically I don't know?
I mean, I'm not going to weigh in on the legitimacy. That's not necessarily my job, but all we can do as a reporter is to point out his financial interests and his financial holdings and how he or she votes and what policies he or she pushes.
Right. And so for Manchin and any other member of Congress, if they just say my financial holdings are in a blind trust, so I don't really know what my financial holdings are, then there's nowhere else you can go as a reporter with that?
There are other ways to find out what their interests are. And obviously there are various disclosure laws in terms of, you know, for example, stock trades that they make, or again, like we've talked about, personal financial assets. But what our responsibility is to, you know, make those public. You know, if there are, you know, sketchy, you know, patterns, then we ask the member or his or her office about it.
One of the big strengths of President Biden is supposed to be that with his long experience in Congress, he knows how to get to yes on complicated negotiations like these. So do you see those skills and that experience helping move this forward, or more the president being frustrated that even he seems to be sidelined by the way this is polarized?
So we're kind of in the thick of these negotiations right now, so maybe they'll be proven to be effective at the end of the day. But right now, his legislative acumen and his negotiating skills are really being put to the test here. And what's been fascinating to observe and talk to lawmakers about over the last, you know, several days, couple of weeks, as these negotiations heated up, is how much his approach, you know, as, you know, Jen Psaki said this week, he is not an arm twisting type. He didn't want any president to tell him what to do when he was a senator. So as president, he's not going to tell anyone to do as a member of Congress. But you do see how that approach is starting to rankle members, particularly of the House of Representatives, where it's a place where presidential arm twisting can be more effective. You know, their political fates go up and down with the fate of the political, or the political fate of the president himself. So they are looking for more direction. It was remarkable how many House Democrats from kind of all ends of the entire spectrum of the Democratic caucus, how many people were saying, we want to hear more from President Biden. He needs to be more personally involved in these negotiations. We want to hear from him, get a clear direction of what he wants, what his agenda is, kind of what side he is taking in these divisions that are going through the Democratic caucus. But if you talk to Democratic senators, they really like the approach that he's been taking, kind of trying to hearing out these senators such as Manchin and Sinema, trying to find that common ground, not being so pushy and pushing with kind of a strong hand here, because they say that's the kind of approach that works the best with senators who know their states better than anyone and know their own kind of political realities better than the president of the United States can. There was a lot of speculation yesterday about whether President Biden would actually come to Capitol Hill to try to speak with House Democrats to whether, you know, perhaps implore them to support his broader agenda. He did not do that. Obviously, open question whether he does that today. But I think it's definitely safe to say that in the House, where things are just so up in the air right now and things are so shaky, where there's a lot of mistrust among members of the Democratic caucus, they really are seeking some sort of clear direction from the president right now.
Sungmin Kim covers the relationship between the Biden administration and Capitol Hill. Sungmin, thanks for giving us so much time this early in the day. I hope you don't have to pull an all-nighter tonight as they negotiate. but I think maybe history suggests that the very powerful political force known as the weekend might get them to yes before dinner time. So I hope so.
It could be a very safe bet.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.